You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the ESPN Aussie Hoops Hour. Kane Pittman and Olga Nulic here. One game of the NBL Championship Series is in the books. And unfortunately, now we have to wait nearly a week for Game 2, but it does give us plenty of time to break down what we saw in Game 1, a dominant Melbourne United. And really, for Tassie, a situation they're not used to being in. So we're going to discuss what we think happened in Game 1 and potentially what to look for moving forward to Game 2. But Olgs, I was jealous, my friend. You know, you were in the building. It looked like a great atmosphere. They had one of the biggest broadcast teams I've ever seen in my life, but I was happy to see all those people on the broadcast because they were all absolute superstars. They were parked all over John Cain Arena. It was an excellent broadcast on ESPN, of course. But it just looked like a fun afternoon. Maybe not if you're a Tassie Jack Jumpers fan, but I'm curious about the fallout from this game for you being in there, and we'll work our way back through the game. What was some of the things that stood out to you from the immediate reaction? Because based on what we've seen through the season, this was probably not a result that I thought was on the cards.
Yeah. For me, the biggest takeaway was we knew how important Will Magnay was to the Tasmania Jack Jumpers and
yes,
what he means to their ceiling. But I think especially against a Melbourne United team like this, that is so physical, that is so athletic, that can make you look small, the significance of Magnay is off the charts. It is at a different level against this team. The early foul trouble that he got in was disastrous for that team because I don't think Marcus Lee is someone who can consistently body up against someone like JLA or Ariel Hook-Porty. I don't think Fabian Krstljevic was up to that task either. And so just the entire game, it just looked like the Jack Jumpers looked really small. They looked less athletic. They were less physical. Scott Roth placed some blame. He wasn't using it as an excuse, but he did explain that there were some travel issues. They had to go back to Tasmania from Perth. They only had a day in between before they had to come to Melbourne. So there was all of that stuff to consider as well. But United came out on the front foot, looked more energized for more of the game, looked more athletic, looked more physical. This was, they knew the moment, and it seemed like Tassie, as soon as Will Magnay got into foul trouble, they almost folded a little bit and let United jump on him.
Well, I could suggest the spirit of Tasmania can drop you off right in beautiful Geelong. And what do you think? Get the boys on a boat? I don't know if that's probably the method that they want to go down.
So I'll say this, to make you even more jealous because you weren't in the building for Game 1. Last I booked my flight to Tasmania. A Melbourne to Hobart flight. So I'm going to be in the building for Game 2. But before I did that, I did consider jumping on the Spirit of Tasmania. So I went on the website, but as soon as it said that it docks in Geelong, quickly closed that tab and immediately booked my flight because there's no chance that I'm heading to your very weird hometown of Geelong, my friend.
Okay, well, while you're potting all sorts of towns, you've now announced that you're going to be in the building in Tasmania, and I personally just want to remind all the Jack Jumpers fans, who was the one who was saying this team was no good, and they're not going to make the playoffs, and they're not going to make the grand final, was Olga Nulic. So you know how those clappers sometimes in the crowd accidentally come apart? I would suggest getting some of those clappers and accidentally making them fly into pieces in the general area of Olga Nulic because I think he deserves it.
Okay, firstly, I don't know how I feel about that. I'm legitimately I'm fearful for my life.
I'm going to be calling on violence, actually. I better take that back.
what I will say is that the moment I started believing in the Jack Jumpers was when Will Magnay entered the line and started playing out of his mind, started playing like Superman. And what happened? They get to the championship series, largely on the back of really impressive play from Will Magnay. Magnay gets in foul trouble, and all of a sudden, they look like a shell of themselves. And so, I just want to say that I think I've been right for most of this time. And I think just my general sentiment was proven largely right in Game 1 as well. What did you make of the whole sort of, you obviously weren't there, but the feel of game one, because the immediate thing for me was physicality and athleticism. It looked like United ticked both of those boxes, and in a game one at home, in a series that everyone's expecting to be super tense, you need those two things. What did you see as the thing that popped out?
Well, Melbourne was very sharp, weren't they? And we discussed what the long layoff might mean for Melbourne United and Perth heading into those semi-final series. Now, Melbourne was down by 16 points in that game one against Illawarra. And I don't want to take anything away from the Hawks because I thought they were fantastic. But this did look like a Melbourne team that had sharpened their tools a little bit. And they came into the game prepared to play. They came into the game. You should always be motivated, but they came into a game against a team that had beaten them twice. So I didn't feel that there was ever going to be any type of slip up. But the big thing for Melbourne that we actually haven't seen all that often in the back half of the season was that all of the key players had big nights. And when they do that, and it's probably more Chris Golding than anyone else, I don't think you have much of a chance to beat that team based on what we've seen right throughout the entire season. They also play two different styles of basketball. And if you just look at the numbers from the box score, Melbourne plus 10 points in the paint, a fast break points in this game, I believe was 16 or 18 to 0. And you could get that feel just by watching the game. You could have probably guessed that. Now, we know the way that Tassie plays, but the one thing I've always said about the Jack Jumpers offense is that people think because they do get into the half-court sets and they do run through their offense that they don't play fast, but they do. They just pick and choose when they do it, and they are highly efficient when they do push the tempo. But against this Melbourne team with the defense that are so damn good right across the board from the guards to Luke Travers to the big men, they didn't have an opportunity to get any easy baskets. So I thought it was just a bit of a grind for Tasmania. But here's the thing. We got to late in the third quarter, and the Jack Jumpers were doing the same routine that we see time and time again. It's like Homer Simpson in that episode where he just keeps getting punched in the face and he's still just standing there. And it doesn't look like it's bothering him too much. And I thought Melbourne completely dominated this game. And yet, with around 2.5 minutes to go in the third quarter, we're still only 7 points. And I was like, look, this is probably going down to the wire. There was one possession that I thought broke the back of the Tassie Jack Jumpers. Chris Golding got a wide-open three-point look from the left wing. He missed it. Kyle Bowen was able to get the offensive rebound. He kicked it back out to Daly. Daly knocks down the three. And then about a minute after that, Ian Clark hits that buzzer beater at the end of the third quarter. And all of a sudden, the Jack Jumpers should have had the ball to close it to 5 of 4. And then a minute later, they're down 13. And I thought that's when the game got away from them a little bit. But they were right there, even though it felt like a lot went wrong.
I don't know if I agree. Two things. Tassie being right there, the scoreboard showed that. But I thought Hook Porty missed three layups in that first half. I thought Anthony Drimmick hit some shots that were uncharacteristic of what we expect from someone like Anthony Drimmick. I thought United sort of had Tasmania's number for the majority of the matchup.
They did.
And I think Tassie was just able to hang around. There was a Krstovic three in the first half. The Drimmick shots in the first half and the third quarter. I thought that sort of kept them around, but I felt as though the momentum was clearly in United's favor for the majority of the game. And so as much as it was kept to within like roughly 10 points, it just, in my mind, it didn't feel like that. It felt like United was stepping on Tassie's necks. I have one more point, but if you want to respond to that, go ahead.
No, all I would say is, though, isn't that what Tasmania does? So
just hang around.
So I agree with you. But that wasn't my thinking. My thinking was, well, hey, if they're within two possessions at the end of the third quarter, then they will give themselves a shot because that's what they do. And then the stars that weren't necessarily having a great night, because none of them did, if they start to hit a few shots in the fourth quarter, they'd be back in it. So I agree with you. Melbourne felt like they dominated the game, but the scoreboard didn't reflect that. And I think it's a dangerous spot to put yourself in when you're playing Tassie.
And I like the point you bring up about that Carbone rebound kick out to Delhi for that catch and shoot three from the right wing. Something I witnessed earlier in the season. It was the Illawarra Hawks were in town. This was super early in the season, first few weeks of the season. And they were at a random court here in Melbourne. I went to go watch them shoot around the day before a game against Melbourne United. And they were doing a transition drill. And they were throwing the ball up ahead to an outlet for a guy for a layup and whatever. and some of the passes were slightly off. And it was Paul Mellett, who was the then assistant coach of that team, stopped the practice. He started yelling at everyone. Now, Paul Mellett's a really reserved guy. He doesn't really yell. And he was basically saying, guys, like, this is Melbourne United. You give them an inch and they will absolutely take it, right? I remember Melbourne had a game against Sydney, and I think it might have been Jalen Adams who gambled on a steal or something like that at the end of a shot clock. And the ball somehow landed in Chris Golding's hands. He gets a split second look, gets a three off, hits it, keeps United sort of hanging around. We have spoken a lot about the Tasmania Jack Jumpers being so organized. They're so well drilled, right? As much as you try to get them out of their stuff, they continue to get it through hands and whatever. But Melbourne United has been that team all season long. They're the team that you can't give an inch because they will take a mile. You give them a chance and they're going to take it. Illawarra was up 16 with less than 7 minutes to go at the end in the fourth quarter of game one of the semifinals. All of a sudden, United starts pressing. They get a sniff of, hey, we can still be in this, and they go ahead and win that game in overtime. So this United team, you have to be locked in, and so you can't give them anything. And so whether it's a bad shot by Jordan Crawford, whether it's an ill-advised three from someone else, you can't give that to this United team, because I think they're just so well-drilled. They have so many veterans on this team. They've been on this stage before. They're just going to take advantage of any mistake that you make.
And to the point that we kind of both already made, some of the shot making from Chris Golding, yes, we come to expect it, but that wasn't there in the Illawarra series either. So that all of a sudden, even though you can make the case he's their best player, their most important player, having that level of performance is obviously a wild card for this Melbourne United team in this game. And if he's hitting six or seven threes, it's going to be pretty hard for Tassie to win this game. I wanted to come back to the Magne stuff, though, because when we talk about the Jack Jumpers and their overall performance in game one, you referenced the foul trouble. But the foul trouble didn't happen until the second quarter. So I thought it was really interesting. Offensively, it felt like the Jack Jumpers had a perfect start, even if the final execution wasn't great. So Magne was getting whatever he wanted, with just by driving to the basket. They were dumping it off to him. Yes, he missed two free throws in the first minute. And the free throw thing is going to be a problem, because this Melbourne team, if they want to just send him to the free throw line, that is going to be a story to watch as this series continues to move on. But Magne had six of the first 8 points for the Jack Jumpers, and then he got taken out of the game with around 6:45 to play in the first quarter. He didn't come back until the 7:45 mark of the second quarter. I don't really understand why that was the case, why he spent so much time off the floor. If he is, like you believe and I believe, at least in line with Milton Doyle as the most important player on this Jack Jumpers team, and you think he has to have a massive series. So I don't know why he spent that much time off the floor. And then the foul trouble, to me, I know there's been a lot of talk about the officials, but please, can we just have one game where it doesn't feel like they are having an over-the-top influence on a game? Because this is the championship series. They call an offensive foul on him on Kyle Bowen that was not an offensive foul. Kyle Bowen literally walked across the lane to stand in front of him when he's running down. That shouldn't have been an offensive foul. So then Magne says something to him and they give him a text straight after that. And all of a sudden, now the Jack Jumpers, maybe their most important player, he has to ride through that foul trouble, ride through the rest of the game. They got to have a better feel. And even if you make the mistake, like the officials will make mistake with calls, the first offensive foul, don't double up and give him a tech after that as well. I thought that was a massive moment in the game, and I just thought it was two massive mistakes from the officials.
Yeah, so a few things can be right at the same time. The refs have to have a better feel, especially in a series like this, especially two teams who I think want to be able to bang. Right, they both want to be able to take contact, so officiate it that way. So I agree with you in that regard. By the same token, Will Magne can't pick up his third or fourth foul by reaching in inexplicably and picking that up. You can't be doing that either. And then I also want to say that the sentiment that the officials were favoring United, which just seems to be the continued sentiment across the social media landscape within the NBL, it's just like not true. The refs can just make mistakes. They are not, respectfully, they are not good enough to rig games. I'll say that much. So I don't think this was a concerted effort to get a guy out of a game or to help a team or whatever. They missed calls on the other end. There was a possession where I think Milton Doyle clearly grabbed Ian Clark after Ian Clark pump faked him and drove to the rim. Could have called it unsportsmanlike like that if you're being like super generous to United. But you don't call that because I think they're trying to give the advantage. Were some of the fouls on Magne soft? Yeah, it just so happened that the person who happened to get those soft calls was the guy who I think is the physical barometer for that team and so important to that team. So I think it was magnified because of who it was and also because of just the nature of the calls. I just generally want to dispel the notion that the officials are supporting a team over another team because Larry Kesselman has a stake in both of these teams. Yeah. I don't think there's a preferred winner in this sort of environment. But I agree with you. I'd like for the officials to let them play a little bit more.
Yeah, I've never had that conversation or, you know, thoughts. Like, I'm not saying you're wrong to bring it up, but yeah, there are certain teams in this league we've continued to talk about it. Melbourne United is one that most of the other fans don't like. I'm totally cool with that. Perth and Bryce Cotton getting fouls in ROC Arena, that's always going to take over social. Those are just things that come up. People don't like the Sydney Kings, so I'm cool with that. I think that's fine. Yeah. I didn't think that this was the reason Tassie lost, but as I was watching that and that moment was happening, I knew that was a five-second part of the game that was going to play a big influence in the way Will Magne played after that, how he was going to be utilized after that. And I thought the third foul where he got locked up with JLA was a really bad one as well. So it's just that the tech foul is the thing that took this over the top. If you make a bad bang-bang call, that happens all the time. But you just can't then double down on that after you've made a mistake, in my opinion, and make matters worse for such an important player.
And this is what the general NBL fan is actually upset about, which is the inconsistency. Because I remember earlier in the season when Will Magne blocked a Mango Matiang dunk attempt and then yelled into his soul and got no tech foul. And that was significantly worse than whatever he may have said to Carl Bowen on the ground there. Like, that situation with Mango Matiang was so much worse if you're trying to get tech fouls for stuff. He got nothing for that. And I like that too, because we wanted the emotions out of these guys. Especially in an environment like this, where we're in a championship series, we want to let these guys sort of experience their own emotions and let it out, because I think it's good for everyone. And I think the NBL agrees with that too. They spent the whole damn pregame talking about a quote that Dean Vickerman gave, right? They're trying to play up the emotions here. Yeah. So let the players do it on the court as well. I think the officials have to be cognizant of that. The 2000 quick succession was also particularly damaging because Scott Roth has this sort of unmoved strategy of not playing guys in the first half if they picked up two fouls. And so he picked up two fouls. He might have played a possession or two beyond that. And I thought United, there was a part where it looked like they were trying to target him a little bit to see if they can get him to pick up his third. But I think it was less than a minute and Scott Roth pulled him. And we've seen that throughout the season where Scott Roth doesn't like guys playing in the first half if they have two fouls. He is very, very conservative with guys on foul trouble. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I'm more in the Mark Degnault, Oklahoma City Thunder camp of, if I'm a coach, I don't want to foul out my guy, because at some point it's you that's fouling the player out, not the fouls. That's my general sentiment, but I also appreciate in a situation like this, a championship series, try to be conservative to make sure that you maybe have your guy in a crucial fourth quarter.
Yeah, and I think the roll-on effect or the flow-on effect of this was also that Marcus Lee looked like maybe he just had a little re-aggravation of that shoulder as well. I don't know if you've heard anything, but this is clearly some nerve-related thing that he's going to continue to work through. It doesn't feel like it's going to keep him out of game two, for instance, but he must have been hampered. Yeah, he must have been hampered, because Magne threw foul trouble and that weird stint on the bench in the first quarter. He only plays 13 minutes. Out of Magne, Marcus Lee, and Krizlovic played the most minutes, which he's been such a great player for this team and so reliable. But I don't think against Melbourne United, with the power and the athleticism of Hook Porter and JLA, I don't think that's going to work out.
No, I agree with you. I think we're both fans of Fabian Krizlovic.
Oh, awesome.
In the spot minutes that he could play, I think he's really solid defensively. Yeah. I just think, yeah, I agree. Against Joe Alatua Jr., against Ariel Hook Porter, there's just like, and again, I'm going to harp on it because it was the thing that I noticed the most. There's just like a physicality difference there. There's an athleticism difference. I think there's a skill set difference where it's just really difficult to play Krstović bulk minutes against those two, and it manifested. We saw the outcome that we expected.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
So a couple of numbers that I had, and then you can bring some other thoughts that you had from this game. I think we should talk about Jordan Crawford because he has been a talking point over this last little period now for Tassie. So one thing that I tweeted this out because I was just fascinated because I don't think that this is something that could have possibly happened in the past, that if Tassie won game one, there was a world where Tassie could win game one, game three, game five and win the title. And Melbourne United would go the entire season without losing back-to-back games and still not win the title.
Still lose.
So, okay.
I read this for everyone. I read this tweet yesterday, and it took me, I was 2 minutes reading it, and I still didn't get it. So I appreciate you explaining it now, because I honestly, I feel thick for not understanding it. But now I get it. I appreciate it very much.
Well, it was also St. Patrick's Day, and... I'm not sure I was making total sense either, but I'm glad that I could explain it to the people. The other number that I did bring up in our headline or storyline column that we drop every Monday on ESPN.com.au was just the fact that this is familiar territory for the Jack Jumpers. They're now 0-5 in game ones under Scott Roth. That's playing tournament is only one game. That's not included. So if you go through the series that they've played in their existence from Melbourne United in 2022, they lost game one, then they lost game one of the grand final series. Obviously, last year against New Zealand, they lose game one in the semi-final series. This year, they lose game one to Perth, and now they've lost game one to Melbourne United as well. So it hasn't always worked out in them winning the series, clearly, but they never strike me as a team that is going to walk away from this rattled and think that they're not in it. Do you have any concerns about the damage that a 20-plus point loss can have on a team that hasn't lost by more than 8 points all season?
Like, yeah, I do. They lose game ones. And if that's the trend, cool. And they sometimes win those series, that's also cool. But I don't know if they lose game ones in this manner. And that's the thing that I think is somewhat concerning. Yeah. There were enough indicators in this game to think that United may have their number. maybe they're just, they're a matchup that works really well against a Jack Jumpers team. And the thing that I point to is that the stuff that I thought Melbourne did particularly well, and put the three-point shooting aside, right? If you're looking at like Chris Golding and Ian Clark, so Chris Golding went 6-10 from downtown. Ian Clark was 3-5, all right? So we're going 9-15. Let's say they went 2-15, they still would have won this game. Right, so the three-point shooting was fun and cool and exciting, but I don't think it was the reason they won. I think the reason they won is because United had some defensive schemes that I thought really, really worked. They guarded the Milton Doyle on-balls really well, whether it's someone like Dele or Shea Ely creating connection and being able to stay with the guy coming off the on-ball, or those bigs who were able to play in that middle area, be able to be disruptive while still protecting the lob. And then Shea Ely on Jordan Crawford. Luke Travers did an incredible job on Jack McVay, which I thought was going to be maybe the deciding matchup of the series. And right now, Luke Travers looks to be the better of the two. Those were the things that I thought United lent on to win this game. And those are things I think can travel, right? Again, they could shoot poorly from downtown.
Yeah.
And if they did in game one, they still would have won the game. All the things they did well that I think actually won them the game are things that I think have the potential to travel.
I think it's very fair. And we've discussed who is going to be the team that's going to chase Melbourne United all season long. And, you know, Perth was in there. Clearly, I've liked Tassie a lot. But we always said that, look, Melbourne is the best team here. I do think Tassie's still going to have moments here where Melbourne United fans are nervous. So I don't see Tasmania getting swept. I just don't see that. I think that most likely we're still going to get a game five. Because I did see, you know, particularly in that first quarter, I saw stretches where the offense, where the Jack Jumpers are going to be able to score. They're going to have to find a way to get in transition. And, you know, I thought Milton Doyle was pretty good in this game. 7 for 13 from the floor. Yeah, he could have a night where he gets really, really hot, and then that helps. But they need a Magne to stay on the floor to help with the pain points that they gave up. So he's got to be playing close to 30 minutes, I think, for Tassie to win games. And I think the defensive stuff can help, because if Melbourne are going to shoot really well from three, that's okay. That's a possibility. They've, particularly with Chris Golding, I mean, he had the whole team overall only made 14 threes. CG had six of those himself. So if he's having six plus, it's going to be really challenging. But you can't be minus double digits in points in the paint. Magne is the key for that. And, you know, honestly, a healthy Marcus Lee as well. But then they need one of Jack McVay and Jordan Crawford to get going. Yeah. I think Jordan Crawford can have a game. Like, I'm not going to rule out that he could have 20 points in this game too. But I really don't like the matchup of him needing to do it against Daly or Shaley, the double guard rotation. I think it's going to be really challenging for him. I think Jack McVay's the guy that's become so reliable. And even if he's being guarded by Luke Travers, I think Magne staying on the floor and Jack McVay finding a way to be more efficient, I think that's clearly the two keys for Tassie.
I agree. And that's why there's no reason to rule them out of this series or otherwise, because they do have those guys. And those guys have demonstrated the ability to score the ball at a high level, to figure out how to overcome different things, right? The way that Luke Travers was guarding McVay, Luke Travers, he just looked super athletic. I think he was beating him to spots. I thought he got a hand up on everything. I think McVay is smart enough and skilled enough to be able to adjust and to potentially scout against that. I think Scott Roth is good enough at scouting against those sorts of things. And so there are some adjustments that can be made. It just did look like United was really dominant physically. And so that's another adjustment. Tassie needs to bring that sort of fight. And I know that's like a weird pretend, like sentimental word, but urgency does matter. We spoke about it all season long with the Sydney Kings, and it's the reason why they weren't able to get over the line a bunch of times. You need that level of urgency. I thought United showed that for 40 minutes, and I imagine being at home, Tassie will have that for a longer stretch of time. I think once they lost Magne, maybe shoulders fell back a little bit. Maybe they got a little bit complacent, because it's like, man, like this is our Superman, and he can no longer lead from the front. He's out on the bench.
Yeah,
I think that everyone has to step up in that regard. Magne staying on the floor is, I think, the most important thing in this series. And if he does, then I think this is going to be closer than what game one indicated.
It's interesting, because I know they showed it on the broadcast. Our good friend, Sam Fassini, tweeted something out about, you know, Jack McVay and should get an NBA shot. Don't disagree with that. He's been awesome in the NBL, a league that's proven that if you're a top level player, you can potentially have an impact in the NBA. But he is being guarded by an NBA caliber athlete for this entire series. So I'm sure there would be eyes on that. I'm curious to see how he can respond, because, you know, whether or not you think that Luke Travers is going to be a guy that's going to get to the NBA and have the outside shooting and all those things that can help him be an NBA player. Defensively, he's already there. So if McVay can have a big series here, you know, clearly it's going to be good for the Jack Jumpers. It might be really good for him as well.
Yeah. And I think Travers's overall performance was understated, defensively, of course, but also on the offensive end, getting on the rim as a connector for this team, especially against this Tassie Jack Jumpers team that does hard hedge a lot. And so you've got these bigs in the paint creating and things like that. Like, he is someone who, I don't know if I'm allowed to reveal who I vote for my Larry Sengstock medal votes. I give a 3-2-1 at the end of each game. But Travers is absolutely part of that conversation. As much as only scoring 9 points makes him look understated, I think we all appreciate the nuance to how impressive his game was. So he was great. JLA was great. Making the most of Will Magne not being on the floor, I think that's like an elite skill as well, to be able to recognize that and then use your advantage. We spoke about the Carl Bowen rebound and things like that. I thought the JLA steal, Milton Doyle, a really
bad pass.
Sort of soft,
come on,
bad pass, just a careless pass to Marcus Lee. JLA steals it, gets a dunk, timeout. After that timeout, JLA gets another dunk, and all of a sudden it looked like Melbourne had all that momentum. And so I thought he did a really good job of finding his spots and finding his advantages when Tasmania had to sort of junk things up with Magnate on the floor.
Do not say a word when I say this, because I don't think that you are allowed to say stuff about
this. I reveal nothing. But I said he's part of the conversation. Okay. A lot of people are part of the conversation, Ken.
If I was voting, I can say what I want. If I was voting...
What would your 3-2-1 be?
It would have been JLA, because I think the physicality really mattered in this game. He also had a couple of blocks. He had 4 offensive rebounds. We already spoke about the impact of the second chance points. So just as I was watching it, I just felt the impact of JLA was so big in this game. He was just all over absolutely everything. And I also do weight it by the matchup. And I know it was taken out of Magne's hands a little bit, but that's a heavyweight one-on-one matchup that we're going to see right throughout. So I thought JLA had the biggest impact of the game. I couldn't go past CG for the second best player because... you know, those threes, a couple of those threes, particularly one to start the fourth quarter when you're like, all right, is there one more swing left in the Jack Jumpers? And it just felt like straight away, first possession of the fourth quarter, okay, it's done. So I think that they were real hammer blows from CG on the outside. And then number one would have been Travis. I actually thought, we discussed this with Andrew Gaze in the jump last week from the series against Illawarra. He thought that, yeah, Daly might have been his MVP for that series. We know he just had that monstrous game one and was impactful throughout game three. I thought he had some good moments as well. For me, it would have been Travis there as well for the two-way play. I think he's having a massive postseason. This is, to me at least, this is by far the best we've seen him in the NBL.
I agree. No comment on the votes that you've just put out there. But yeah, I agree. All super impactful. I think it's cool that we can discuss these guys beyond just points scored. But in saying that, some of those Chris Golding threes, and I think maybe we get a bit used to the shots that Golding takes and hits.
Yeah, that's right.
But like, I get the first one was easy, just like a corner three in transition. But that step back on Clint Steindl, and then the one in the corner where he didn't even dip it below his forehead. The one in the, I want to say, either third or fourth quarter, coming off an on ball, maybe from 30 feet, Jack McVay's a little bit late, just sticks out in his face. Just the one that to start the third quarter over Magne in the corner, that's the corner that our media seats are in. And you can just see the size and length of Will Magne contesting that shot. And you have no idea how Golden could even see the rim, let alone get a shot up and get it in. Just the difficulty of those shots is off the charts. Going 6 of 10 in a game like that, just... unbelievable shot making from Chris Golden.
It was, and he did pass Derek Rucker for all-time three-point makes during the game while Rucker was on the broadcast, which I always love. I think Leonard Copeland next on the list for him. So, I think we're just about at the end of this, but I will say, I already mentioned, I thought, you know, coming through the broadcast, it looked like a really good atmosphere at John Cain Arena, and some of the plays, like the JLA dunk, some of those Chris Golding threes, Ian Clark at the end of the third quarter.
Very loud after that Clark three.
Home court matters, man. Home court really matters. Yeah. So I'm excited to watch this now down in Tassie. And I don't know, have you been to a game in Tassie before?
Never. Yeah. I've never been to Hobart as an adult.
Oh, it's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
And so I am, I am hopeful that it is as everyone describes it. It is. I'm almost concerned with how loud it's going to be because of the way everyone has described my State Bank Arena. So I'm really excited to get in there, see the atmosphere, see if it's worthy of all the talk about it.
Well, I was jealous about John Cain Arena, but I've been there many times. I haven't been to a Jack Jumpers game, and it's always on my list. It's still going to be on my list moving forward. What a week for Tasmania. They've got a footy team as well, so all the locals have got to be very happy. But the Jack Jumpers are the original and the best. So I'm hoping this series really draws out. I want to watch more basketball. I want to do more podcasts with you regarding this NBL Grand Final Championship Series. So Friday night, on ESPN. Make sure you're locked on the couch and ready to watch Game 2, Melbourne United and the Tassie Jack Jumpers. And, Olgs, I just want to say, I know, you know, I was a little bit aggressive at the start and I was calling for violence. I don't want you to get hurt down there. The Tassie people are very nice. The hospitality will be outstanding, I'm sure of it.
If you're a Jack Jumpers fan, a Tasmanian, don't throw a clapper at me. Yeah, we don't want to get into that fight again. Otherwise, I'm going to get Dean Vickerman to give me another juicy quote and start a whole new news cycle, okay?
Well, that's right. Yes. You did set Dean up there. So you're in it. You're an antagonist, actually. Hey, you got some good mileage out of that story. Let's leave it there. It's a massive basketball week. Obviously, the NBA on the road to the postseason. Southside Flyers as well. Very lucky to get to Game 3. Well, I don't want to say lucky, but they scraped through.
Nah, lucky. It was that end of that game too. Man, I was on the edge of my seat. That was crazy.
Okay. Well, I don't like saying lucky. You're not lucky to win a title. You got to be great. But the Flyers, that team was stacked with talent. I know we spent a lot of time talking about Lauren Jackson, but overall, awesome squad. They were able to win that title. March Madness this week, the tournaments, the men and the women getting underway as well. So you're just going to find the NBL in between all this other basketball. You can watch it all on ESPN, your home for hoops. This has been the ESPN Aussie Hoops Hour. I'm Kane Pittman, he's Olga Nulich, and we'll be back next week and we'll see where this championship series sits.